Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
Never filtered. Always fun.
I feel like I'm married to you, because I know what I want to say to you. You just feel like arguing today, don't you?
I'm in the mood.
Well, they had one of the best records in the league. Wouldn't you think they would be favored?
I don't know, honey.
Sweetie, you just want to argue today, honey.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
It's Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Noodles just couldn't handle what happened last night in the Toronto sports scene. He said, I can't come in today. He was too invested. He wanted the Leafs to win, TFC to win, the Blue Jays to win. It didn't happen. The Raptors almost got him in here. The Raptors won last night by 10, and Noodles called us this morning and said, you know what? I'm thinking about coming in because the Raptors got us a win last night. But he's such a Toronto guy now. He said, I can't do it. I can't come in and talk about that again. I can't revisit what happened in Game 7 last night. So Noodles isn't here today. Do you think people buy that?
No. He is so stoic watching the games. He's just jot notes.
No emotion at all?
No, there's nobody here has any emotion. They don't care who wins or loses.
Well, you do.
Well, I did, yeah, but not anymore.
What do you mean not anymore?
It's over.
Well, I know that now, but I'm saying during the moment.
Oh, I'm not telling you how I behave down there. Everybody that I work with knows how I behave, but you do too.
But is it awkward, like when you're sitting beside Noodles and Bobby Mack and Duffy?
No, Bobby will say, shut up and don't. There's no cheering in here.
There's no cheering in the green room? I know there's no cheering in the press room.
It's a complicated story.
Express it to us.
Well, there's another guy behind the scenes who's a Bruins fan, and he's whining and complaining, and then there's me.
Okay. Well,
Bobby's like, you two, be quiet.
That I can understand. You can't have a fight breaking out because of two lunatic fans.
There would never be that. There would never be that. But Jamie, too, was like, just calm down, you two, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, last night was a really fun game.
As far as entertainment value, unless you're a Leaf fan, the end result was terrible. That sucks.
But in terms of just simply being a fun back-and-forth game, that's one of the craziest Game 7s you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
Up until the Bruins went up 6-4 and it was over and the lights were out and the Leafs decided we're done. But the Leafs had three different leads. There were lead changes all night. The Bruins had the lead after the first. The Leafs had the lead after the second. I mean, it was a thoroughly entertaining game. And it was an emotional, swinging type of game too, and type of evening. I mean, if you're a Leaf fan, you were riding some real highs last night.
Yeah, and I'm with you that Krug goal. You should have known that things were.
That was it. That the game ended when Torrey Krug scored that weak goal that cannot go in. That was Freddie Anderson sending a message: I'm not here. I'm not bailing you out. And the Leafs were in a position at that point where they needed to be bailed out.
Mm-hmm.
They needed him to give them 20 minutes of miracle goaltending, which is asking a lot, is unfair, is probably not what should happen, but that's what they needed last night, and he couldn't supply it for them. Freddie Anderson didn't play well enough. Jake Gardner's a whipping boy in the city. A lot of people are asking us, do you think it'll be the Larry Murphy treatment? I don't think so, because you got a full offseason. They don't play again for like 5.5 months. People aren't going to have this game in their minds come game one next October. But it's going to be, I think, a fascinating offseason because there is so much potential for friction, for turnover, for high expectations, right? I mean, guys are going to get paid. Some guys are going to walk. I think there's possibilities. There's going to be trades. They're going to draft somewhere in the middle of the 20s, so it's not like their draft pick is necessarily going to own the offseason, but maybe
it's not
they
like
move.
That group of players that they assembled last year and had the best season in Maple Leafs history is going to be together for that ever again. People are leaving. There's going to be changeover.
Yeah, JVR, Bozak, Komarov,
I don't
Polak.
Expect any of them to be back.
I don't really expect any of them either.
Yeah.
I really don't. I'm bracing myself for all three of those vets up front to move. I don't think you bring back Roman Polak. Ron Hainsey has another year on his deal, but I don't know what you can expect out of him at 38, 39. He gave you everything he possibly could this year. I have no idea what to expect out of him. And Jake Gardner's got 1 year left on his deal. They're not going to act like lunatics because of one game in and sell them down the river or put them on waivers or anything silly like that. And a lot of people are suggesting that that's what they do. You do not want that to actually be the case. But would it shock me if their overall evaluation is they don't think they can win with Gardner or they feel they have to move on from him? No, that wouldn't shock me at all. Matthews isn't going anywhere. Marner's not going anywhere. Freddie Anderson's not going anywhere. Riley's not going anywhere. Babcock's not going anywhere. That's it in terms of how I feel with like 100% certainty. I don't think Nylander's going anywhere, Kadri's going anywhere, Brown, Hyman, Zaitsev, but things change, man.
Yeah, people can make decisions to make things change quickly. It's just we don't want to move forward with this. We don't believe in that. But the thing is, if you dislike something, getting someone else to like it is an awfully difficult thing to do.
Well, that's true.
Everybody watches. Everybody knows. Whenever I'm in a press box, I'll ask pro scouts because I don't want to get it into a thought process where I have tunnel vision, where I watch so much of the Leaf games because we cover them and we talk about them. It's like, you know, you just throw feelers out there, pro scouts, people in management. You know, you just toss a name out there. What would your thoughts be on this guy if he ever came across your desk in your organization? It's either love it, hate it, no chance, maybe, depends what the offer. So you just get different perspectives.
Yeah, I think that is important to do. I talked to a pro scout up in the box during the playoffs this year, too, and he said, you know, from his perspective, they have one top four defenseman. He thinks Morgan Riley is the only guy who he would truly define as a top four.
And that's an accurate assessment.
I think Jake Gardner, like last night, was so outlandish and such an awful night. That's one of the worst performances in a big game you'll ever see out of a player. But it's one game. It doesn't truly define what he actually is. When he's on his game, I think he is a top four guy. He's a second pairing guy, but he is a top four guy. The problem is when he's off his game, he's an unmitigated disaster. Zaitsev, I think, has the ability to be a four, but they need improvements in the top four. There's no denying that. And that was difficult for Leaf fans last night because it wasn't quite to the same extent as what we went through 5 years ago. Being up 4-1 with 11 minutes to go, that's unprecedented. That's a historical nuclear meltdown that I don't think anybody's ever going to go through again. I hope nobody has to go through again. But last night, make no mistake of it, the third period, that was a choke job. That's what it was. You're up a goal in the third period, game seven, and you lose 4-0 in the final 20 minutes. That was a choke job.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was.
Yes, it was.
And yeah, they're young, but there's some veterans on that team, too. Freddie Anderson's not young. Jake Gardner's not young. And the young guys, they have built up these kind of expectations based on their play. So Matthews, we all know what the story is. He didn't play well enough through seven games. Being critical of him is fair. It's honest. Doesn't change what he represents to the city and the organization.
Just hope that this core is going to stay together for the better part of 10 years and they'll have a bunch of shots.
I think they will.
Yeah. That's all you're hoping for
in the
future.
I think they will. Yeah. Like, glass half empty is an easy take. Last night was brutal. Same old Leafs. Same old organization, the Bruins own them, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of different things.
I got to tell you another thing. Like, there's been a lot of discussion. There's been people tweeting about the playoff format. I don't dread the Boston Bruins facing them because of Chara one more time or because of Bergeron. It's like, mix it up. And now you got a bunch of first versus, it's not right. And the fact the NHL doesn't change it is a complete and utter joke.
Well, they're not going to change it.
Why not? Everyone hates it.
They're stubborn.
They're stupid.
They believe it works.
It doesn't. It's not.
They believe it works, though. That's what it doesn't matter what you and I think.
It doesn't work for anybody else except them. It seems.
The teams don't like it.
The fans don't like it. The players don't like it. We don't like it. Jerry's the only one that likes it.
Well, the owners sign off on it too. I would guess the board of governors.
I bet you, if you got them in the room, they would all say, "Yeah, let's go to the 1-8." Every single one.
You think so?
Yes, I do. We'll ask Dregs when he's in here.
Okay, we'll see what he has to say about that. Because I don't get the impression like they're going to make a change.
Oh, really? You don't think Ted Leonis in Washington would be on board for that?
But even before this was going down, they were meeting Pittsburgh.
Who cares? I guarantee you Dregs will say they would change it.
Okay, we'll get Dregs in here in about 15 minutes. The ACC was rocking last night, and for obvious reasons. The Raptors, they got a big win last night, and that kind of played out the way we saw Game 4 play out. It was a tight game in the fourth, and the home team separated themselves late in the fourth quarter. That was Washington in Game 4 last night. It was the Raptors. And we got a guy on the line who was down there, our good buddy, former coach, former player, TSN NBA analyst. Here's Sam Mitchell. What's up, Sam?
What's up, guys?
What's up, Sam? You miss me, buddy?
Like I miss a bad, bad cold. Of course I do.
Yeah, of course.
Such a jerk, man.
What was that like last
night? Well, you don't ask another man if you miss him. I mean, come on, dude.
That's on him. I agree with you.
Yeah. Dude, we're good buddies. I miss our chats. We have really detailed chats.
Well, you didn't say that, though. If you would have said, hey, do you miss our conversations or our chat? I would have said, of course I do. But you said, do you miss me? And it sounded kind of teary-eyed and misty.
Yeah, it wasn't that.
I had to protect my manhood.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't blame you for pulling the shield out and saying, no, I can't go down that road. what was it like down there last night? I mean, take us through the fourth quarter and how you saw it play out and how the Raptors found a way to separate themselves late in that game.
Well, first of all, I just thought DeMar DeRozan did what an all-star does. He came out from the beginning, and he just took control of that game. Instead of letting the game come to him, he just grabbed it by the throat, and he was aggressive, and he set the tone. Because obviously in Washington, game 3 and 4, a lot of the role players, they were a little tentative to shoot the ball. But you saw last night, I think DeMar, by him being so aggressive to start the game, and then you saw guys like, I mean, DeLon Wright was just unbelievable on both ends of the floor. Those two strips of John Wall and that three that he made, and his just constant play all night, I thought he was an X factor. And then JV in the fourth quarter, having been on the court, you know, being a bully, he's the biggest guy on the court, and he played like it last night. He was dominating. So I just thought the Raptors put together a complete game. The thing that they are going to have to be conscious of is they got beat on the boards by 15. And in the playoffs, if you turn the ball over and give teams second chances, that normally tends to a loss, equates to a loss. But to tell you how good the Raptors played last night, they turned the ball over, and they got beat on the glass, and they still won the game by 10.
Don't you think they have to go into Washington and just for confidence, if they want to go on a long road, like a long run here in the playoffs, like just say to each other, let's get this done and enough of the garbage, and we can do it, and we're going to pick up some momentum here?
Well, you would like to say that, but think about it. The fact that they had the best record in the East and the second best record in all the NBA, they're going to have a seventh game or a fifth game at home. So they know that. And you have to remember, too, this Raptor team is different than, like, some of the other teams. They play 10, 11, 12 guys. And there's not obviously there's a little drop-off when DeMar DeRozan and Kyle's not in the game, but it's not much when you look at how they compensate for those two guys being off the floor. They pick up their defensive intensity. They move the ball. They get more layups. They get more steals. They get out in transition more. So the Raptors are probably one of the few teams that can actually go deep into series throughout the playoffs and not be dog tired because of their depth. So, in theory, you would like to do that. But for this Toronto team, I don't think that's necessarily a prerequisite. They just may be one of those teams that may have to grind games out and grind series out.
With Sam Mitchell, you mentioned DeLon Wright, and I've been a big fan of his really since he got here, and last night was kind of a coming-out game for him. I mean, he got the podium treatment post-game, and he was big in the fourth quarter. He got a lot of minutes. But where does Fred VanVleet play into this? If Fred returns for Game 6 or at any point down the road, how do you think Dwayne Casey is going to approach the minutes for DeLon Wright and Fred VanVleet?
Well, that's a good problem to have. You know, as a coach, the real problem is when you look down to your bench and you need to make a sub and you don't know who put in the game because they're not that good. That's a great problem to have if you're Dwayne Casey. Look, right now you just ride DeLon Wright until he runs out of gas, and you know you got Fred VanVleet in the bullpen, and if you need that extra little jolt or you need that defensive pressure, I wouldn't be surprised if Dwayne Casey threw him out there if he's healthy. But, you know, you go back to how you was playing. You played Freddie at the one, and DeLon's been the two handling the ball, guarding bigger guys. So I don't think nothing changes for this Raptor team, and that's been the good thing about them. All these guys have been interchangeable. All these guys have checked their attitude at the door. Because think about it. There's nights that Bebe plays, there's nights he doesn't play. You don't see any attitude. It's all about the team. And so it's refreshing to watch this Raptor team because, you know, it's not really about me. It's about we. And this group has done some amazing things. They got a chance to go into Washington, like you said, and close them down. But if they don't, they know they got their game 7 in the ACC, and we know how loud that place could be.
With Sam Mitchell, got to get your take on what happened in that Cavs finale last night where LeBron, he gets that block late, but it turns out it was a goaltender. It should have been called a goaltender, according to the NBA earlier today, and then he hits that miracle three to walk off. Does he get that call because it's LeBron, or do you just trust that, you know, it was such a close call and that's a difficult spot to be in for the refs?
Okay, well, I'm going to stop you right there. Why do we have replay? See, this is where the training of the referees has a problem. In a close call like that, in a game like that, the referees should have made the call and then went to the replay to confirm it or deny it. But they should have blew the whistle. That's too close of a call to let go. And that's a tough call to make anyway, because it's not a goaltending unless that ball touches that glass. And clearly it did. So it was a goaltending. And Victor Oladipo after the game said it right. You don't know what's the mindset of the Cavaliers players if they're down two. You know, think about it. LeBron James knew one thing. Make a miss, they were going to play five. If he misses the shot, they were going to play five more minutes. So it really was no pressure on LeBron James on that shot because they were going to overtime. So, but think about the pressure, what kind of pressure it would have been if they were down two. And then you got to ask yourself this. Would LeBron have shot the three, or would he have tried to, you know, make a quick move and get to the basket some kind of way to try to draw a foul or get a layup? So there's a lot of different variables if that call was made. And to me, the officials got to be trained in that situation to blow the whistle and then go to the table to confirm or deny if it was a clean block or a goaltend.
Thank you, Sam. Always appreciate it. We'll do it again soon. We miss you, man.
All right, guys. I miss you, too.
Yeah, there you go. We got you. There's Sam Mitchell, our NBA analyst. He misses us. Do you believe that?
No. He's a fun guy to talk to, man.
Yeah, he's great. We got to get him back in studio.
Yeah,
but
that's when we have our best hits with Sam.
That's when we can go anywhere with Sam. Yeah. I wanted to get his take on the Josh Allen stuff, but like this Josh Allen story is it's not quite Laramie Tunsil.
I think it's worse, Brian.
You think it's worse? Do you think what he did is worse? Is that what you're saying? Because like let me detail it for those that aren't familiar. Josh Allen expected to be one of the big four quarterbacks going tonight in the draft.
I just think those statements, it just puts a
He tweeted out a bunch of stuff four or 5 years ago, used the N-word, he did a lot of different stuff that was offside.
And I think if you're a community like smoking weed these days, people are just like, whatever, you smoke weed. I think everybody knows all athletes smoke weed or whatever. I don't care. I don't think anybody else cares.
No, I don't think a lot of people care.
So that's why I just think this stuff is
But I think the Allen stuff, I think the African-American community, they are going to care about it, or they have the right to care about it. I'm not convinced the teams are going to care about it. I'm not convinced the teams are going to move him off of their draft board.
Well, I think the NFL, more than any other league, they're willing to forgive once the performance.
And that's the thing about this kid.
If the performance catches up, it's like people in the NFL, Dallas Cowboys fans, Ezekiel Elliott, he starts going out there and rushing for 150 yards a game. Everyone's like, what did he do?
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, I think that league, more than any, they forgive. And you know what? People deserve second opportunities. I'm not going to get into all the garbage that's gone on in the NFL or different sports, but they seem to forget. And my guy just goes out and does his job. That's all we care about.
I do think you have to give him the benefit of this was when he was 14, 15, 16
I get
years
it.
Old.
It's idiotic.
Everybody matures. I'm not condoning any of the stuff that he was writing. It was stupid. He shouldn't have done it. But at 14, 15, 16, with social media being what it is, there's a lot of people that could get themselves in trouble.
I thought it almost seemed like his friends were hijacking his phone.
I think that happened.
That happened to Tyler Seguin in Boston. There was jokes being made at 4 in the morning, and you could tell somebody stole his phone.
Yeah, he is.
Because I know Tyler, and he would never do that.
He has claimed that. Like, Josh Allen has said some of it was my friend stole the phone and tweeted out dumb stuff, and kids do that. And he was a kid at the time. The difference is now he's in the spotlight. He might go first overall, which would be so Brownsy for them to finally get the guy who they believe is the big quarterback, and there's a controversy surrounding him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he's going to go first overall, but he's in the conversation to go first overall. And this is where, like, if you're an agent now, you have to just wash out anything
your clients have done. You're doing a lot more work than you've had to in the past.
The first thing you have to do if you take on a big client is you've got to basically wash out everything they've done on social media. Almost everything. Get rid of everything.
I agree. Forensic, like, phone person.
Yes. Forensic auditing of your Twitter account, Instagram account, Facebook account. And that's probably a bad message to send. That means you can, you know, basically get them out of jail before they even get to jail. But it's a reality if you're in that position, if you are the agent.
Hey, it happens. I believe it happens in regular life. Like, you go for a job interview. Oh, so-and-so in 2011.
Absolutely.
You tweeted this. What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. Like, you have to be responsible for what you tweet out, post on Instagram, Facebook. As I say, you are responsible for your own content.
You got that right. All right, you are responsible for you.
Darren Dreger, our TSN Hockey Insider, will be in studio. We'll get his take on Game 7 last night and the upcoming offseason for the Maple Leafs and his take on the new draft lottery rules. Do you hear what they're doing? Apparently they're going to change it up this year, and a lot of people are rattled about that.
Oh, God.
So we'll see what Dregs has to say about all that. And his take on what you stated, that you believe every owner in the league would want to revert to the 1-versus-8 playoff format.
Yes, guy.
Darren Dreger in studio next. All right, the Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It and Darren Dreger, a Hockey Insider in studio. We haven't seen Dregs in a while.
I know.
You've been out in Winnipeg.
Not a bad series. The obvious
happened.
How crazy
is it going to be for that series?
You know, it's a great atmosphere. I mean, that's somewhat obvious. But, I mean, that building is... you can literally feel it vibrate in there. It's a small building. If I were starting an NHL franchise... Like Seattle, when they build this new arena, now maybe
make
they're
it a
pairing
bit smaller.
Make it a bit smaller, man. Just jam it to the rafters. Make sure that
loud.
You know the crowd is almost on top of the ice. And as
San
players,
Jose's
you like
that
it.
Too. Isn't
yeah,
it? San Jose's not a giant rink, and it's loud.
And so one of the most surprising things for me, I guess it was after Game 5, they estimated something like 30,000+ kind of hovering around the building at any one particular time. They only had 12 arrests for public intoxication.
That's not bad.
I mean, that's not bad for 30,000+ outside.
Yeah.
I mean, trust me, I've been down Portage in Maine over the years, and it can get a little sketchy out there.
They get after it in Winnipeg.
Well. But now, you know, obviously Winnipeg, Nashville is going to be a lot of fun in both cities.
You want to get to your playoff format rant and what you think Dregs is going to say.
Oh, you want 1-versus-8?
And I told him before you came in here that if you asked anybody in the NHL GMs, they would be for it too.
He said 100% of the owners would support
that. The only people that like it is Gary. He goes, we're happy with it. But everybody you talk to in the NHL.
Yeah.
I'm not an insider, but I know a lot of people, too.
I hear you,
and they all say, this is so stupid.
Yeah. I mean, how big of a difference do you think it would have made?
Look at the matchups right now. What are they? They're 1-versus-2. And
well, the top two seeds
Barry
in each
Brooks
conference
had a good
are playing.
Tweet today.
Yeah, it's Tampa and Boston are the top two in the East. They're playing in the second round, and Nashville and Winnipeg are the top two.
No, I get it, but I would be okay with that because the longer you can stretch the better teams into the playoffs.
No kidding.
That,
why
that's what
you
we're buying
have Nashville,
into.
Nashville, Winnipeg, or something
in the Western Conference Final.
But they're not changing.
100%. They're not changing.
They're not going to change it.
But I would say this: like at some point, and it's almost stubbornness not to change it.
No
right?
kidding. Like, listen to what people have to say.
So at some point, and maybe it's when they welcome Seattle into the National Hockey League as a 32nd team, at some point you're going to have to address that more teams need to be able to qualify for the playoffs, do you not? I mean, 16 teams is based on a 21-team league, you know, a number of years back.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you invite more teams into the mix, at that point you just overhaul the process and do it that way.
Speaking of overhauling the process, the Leafs are in a position where the fans are crying for blood. They're freaking out. Last night was a difficult night for Leaf fans. I mean, that wasn't quite deja vu, but they were up a goal going into the third, and they choked it away in the third period. I've been saying all day, as emotional as you are as a fan, you don't want your front office to be emotional. They can't act like fantasy GMs that just drank 24 beers and start getting rid of players just for the sake of it because of one game.
Even though they might have drank 24 beers.
They might have, and I wouldn't blame them with the way it all played out. Like they
I don't think Lou drinks. So
they had an opportunity last night, right?
But
I mean, what's your take on the mood for change within that front office, how much we should be bracing for this summer?
Yeah.
What's your read on
that?
Well,
look, number one, let me qualify it by saying any information that's surfacing out there is speculation at best, because there is no one who's breaking through the concrete wall around the offices of Maple Leaf Sports, or Lou Lamoriello or Brendan Shanahan's office at this stage. So what you do is you try and gather little tidbits of information from around the league. And the info that I've gathered in the last 15 hours or so is that Lou is expected to come back for another year. Now, I'm not going to stake my reputation on that, but based on the conversations that he's had with agents this week, tells you that he's likely moving forward for another year.
And what would that mean for the other guys, though? Wouldn't they be kind of expecting to move in at some point or another?
100%. You're talking about Kyle Dubas, who, you know, had opportunity last offseason with the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, the wide speculation is that Paul Fenton of the Nashville Predators is likely going to get the GM job of the Minnesota Wild. So maybe that takes one off the books. But
that guy's been around forever. Like, he's been rumored. You've been saying that guy's...
Everybody does.
I know.
But he's... Look, there's history there with Craig Leopold, who was in Nashville. And, you know... And look, I think Paul Fenton would make an excellent general manager. But that's what the thinking is of Kyle Dubas. So if Kyle Dubas is the next general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that's what the league told the National Hockey League when the league had to intervene to say, well, Colorado can't take Kyle Dubas because he's under contract with the Maple Leafs, and the Maple Leafs are telling us that he's going to be the next GM. You know, when is that? Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious about one thing, though. We know how much respect Lou commands. Right? And he does. And he deserves a high level of respect from all those around him. Lou can manage Mike Babcock. Mike Babcock is a hands-on head coach when it comes to player personnel. I mean, I know he made a call to Detroit, you know, inquiring on Luke Glendening. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the general manager's job, but the coach did it. That's fine. I'm sure Lou followed up after the fact. Is Kyle Dubas going to have the same sort of influence over Mike Babcock? He might.
Well, he has to.
Well,
if you're the guy, you have
to. It's the only way Shanahan allows it to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, it's a non-starter. From a hockey perspective, I believe Kyle Dubas is ready, but I don't think Lou Lamoriello is ready to step away.
Yeah, see, I think they can still use Lou in certain areas of the operation. Like, I look at these big contracts that are coming up, the big decisions with Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, and I would be more comfortable with Lamoriello negotiating them, even though he can be stubborn, and I know there's some concerns on the outside of it that maybe there's going to be friction caused because of the way Lou works.
Well, if you look at Austin Matthews in the entry-level deals, he was one of the last guys to get his done.
But in the end, it didn't matter.
I know.
He still came in and he played.
But I'll tell you this. It's a different time than it was when Austin Matthews signed his entry-level deal. I think the Maple Leafs would be wise to get to Austin Matthews in the very near future. To say, here's the 8-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the 10, 11, 12, whatever that number
is. But that's the battle, though. It's going to be somewhere between 10 and 13 million.
Okay.
The Leafs have to win that battle.
But what if Lou doesn't? What if Lou says, look, I've got you under contract for another year. We're just allowed to extend you on July 1st. That doesn't mean we have to extend you on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
What if the Leafs take that position? What if Lou says, no, I'm doing this my way because it's always worked doing it my way.
Right.
I don't know that it works doing it that way.
I think you piss off a player and it's looking at Jack Eichel, who hasn't done anything close with his organization, and they just hand him an 8-year, $10 million deal, and you're going to, what, do that to me to prove a point?
It's dicey.
He's the one guy, although he didn't perform in these playoffs, I don't think you want to get him on the wrong
foot. I think Marner, and I'm not predicting this is going to happen, I think Marner would be okay with it. I think Marner would say, okay, I'll stick another 85 points up yours, and then you're going to pay me more.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, and O-Dog, you said it a month or so ago, and we were kind of joking in studio during one of these segments when you threw out the number of $10 million for Marner. Just, you know, again, I'll tell you what, there are many people out there, and I'm sure a lot of them close to Mitch Marner, who absolutely believe that he's in the same conversation as Austin Matthews is in negotiating an extension. He's not going to get the exact same, but...
Yeah, he sure moved the needle from January 1st till the end of the season into the playoffs.
If Matthews gets 11, is Marner taking less than 9?
I don't think so.
I mean, you do kind of have a McDavid-Draisaitl conversation, but I think they're closer together.
To me, the gap is, way closer together.
They're closer. I agree with you. McDavid has established himself as a different level than everybody outside of
And then the forgotten guy is Willie Nylander, whose contract does have to be addressed.
Yeah, but I think he's lost leverage here. I think down the stretch and into the playoffs.
He'll probably have to bridge, and that's probably best for him, right?
In your knowledge, Dregs, in the National Hockey League, like they always say, they got to figure out what they have here. I think Ray said it today. They got to know what they have. And Zaitsev, Zaitsev's not 20.
No.
Is he, 27 now?
25 or 26.
He's not 25. He's 26 or 27. Yeah. But you're thinking at that age, what is he going to make leaps and bounds next year where they're like, okay, that's the Zaitsev we thought? Don't you already know?
They've committed to him anyway. They already gave him a deal.
Right now, it looks like they overpaid and gave him too much term. That's the way it looks based on his year this year. Last year, you wouldn't have thought that. So,
I guess that contract, it's like, if they went to him and said, okay, Zaitsev, here's a 3-year deal, would he have said, oh, go to hell?
That's what I never understood.
It's like, wouldn't he be thankful that he got a 3-year extension?
Babcock, and he was an RFA, too.
Babcock loved him. That was the reason he went to the World Championship that year, was to look at...
You know what, Darren? I've been in love, too, at midnight and then 2 o'clock in the morning when the lights come on. Guess what?
Very similar. I get it. Yeah, it's very similar. Cockroaches.
The ugly lights come on, and you're in shock.
One guy, I mean, this isn't like the Randy Carlyle era where we have to give Jake Gardner those 300 games to determine who he is. He is what he is. Last night...
he's a gunslinger.
He is, and last night everything went wrong for him. Like it got to a point where I don't very often feel bad for athletes based on their performance. I felt bad for the guy last night. That was awful. It was a brutal performance. He knows it. I credit him. He owned it after the game. He is a primary example of where you can't get overly emotional and just say, forget it, he's gone because of one game. But if it were to get to a point, and it wouldn't shock me if it did, where they decided, you know what, we don't know if we can win with him, or we're not going to sign him long-term after this upcoming year.
Yeah.
How much of a market would you expect to be out there for a guy like Gardner?
Yeah, right now I expect that market would be strong. You know, obviously not based on last night. But you look at the body of the work, and I think that we'd all agree that defensively he made strides this season.
Past few years under Babcock.
He's never going to be that all-around top-pairing guy. He's not. But does he fit comfortably in most teams' top four? I think he does. And he gives you that offensive spark. The thing that was weird for me, you know, how many of those stretch passes did he attempt in that game last night? Like, is someone on that bench not saying, would you stop it?
Yeah, settle
down. I mean, so it's either part of the attack.
Why are some of them even being called stretch passes when they hit somebody's shin pad and they end up in the back of the net?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair, too.
But he's attempting
This is not about stretch passes. No. Stretch passes. Those are creative. Those are game-changing at the right particular... This is talking about simple defensive zone responsibilities that were botched up, butchered, and it looked like there was a casualness of whatever happens, happens. That's where he gets himself in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, where he saved himself after the fact was obviously, Brian, as you said, he 100% owned it.
Yeah, he had the balls to say, you know what, I was terrible tonight.
Yeah. Now, if he skulks back into the trainer's room or in the player quarters and doesn't make himself available, you know, pack his bags and get him out, no matter what the return is. I think that he created some leverage and some currency by doing that, because outside markets look at the body of the work. They don't boil it down to a horrendous showing in Game 7 of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So if you're not sold on him being a part of the solution moving forward, then my suggestion would be to package him as early as this offseason. You know, are you in love with Ryan Ellis? If you're Mike Babcock, then find a way to get Ryan Ellis out of Nashville. Do you like Oliver Ekman-Larsson? That's fine. Then put Jake Gardner into a deal with Kasperi Kapanen, another prospect, a first-round draft pick, and see if John Chyka is willing to play ball. I'm just, of course, spitballing
here.
But
those are the names that are going to be out.
But those are the names that are going, and those are the names that you would have to consider, wouldn't you? If you're willing to move Jake Gardner, who, like it or lump it, man, you know,
on this team, he's an important piece.
He's an important piece, but then you got to look at Dermott. Is Dermott the replacement for Jake Gardner? And are you convinced that he's a cheaper version and he can play the minutes that Gardner plays?
One part of the program going forward that we really haven't focused on is the goaltending situation. You know, we've talked a lot about the money that could be thrown around up front.
Yeah.
JVR, Komarov, Bozak, and their status. We just talked about the back end. It worked out well for them this year, Anderson and McElhinney, but they got way more out of McElhinney than they thought they would.
Yeah.
And Anderson was really consistent, inconsistent down the stretch. Quite frankly, his seven-game series was kind of a microcosm of his season as a, in general.
Yeah.
Bad start, great in the middle, and really came up short down the stretch. Could you see Garrett Sparks fighting for position? Could you see them trying to bring in a guy that would force more out of Freddie Anderson, or are they just, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound now, and this is the guy regardless of what we just saw?
Yeah, I mean, you always want, you know, somebody who's going to push your starter, right? And McElhinney isn't that, but he gives you quality starts, or
yeah,
at least he has. Enough to consider, you know, keeping him around? Probably. I think they've got to make a decision on Garrett Sparks. You know, when you've had a player, be it a goaltender or a defense, doesn't matter who, in your organization for long enough, you either know what you have or you cut bait, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if he's not part of the organization moving forward. That's just a gut instinct. I look at a guy like Khudobin, you know.
He was really
good for the Bruins, man. Like, if you're the Oilers, as an example, you know, Cam Talbot most definitely needs somebody to punch him in the pants and fight for that crease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a player like that is most definitely going to provide that option.
Well, it's going to be an interesting offseason. The second round starting tonight. It starts in, like, what, 20 minutes or just under an hour, I believe. So
yeah,
people are turning the page. We're ready to go. Good stuff, Dregs. Good seeing you, man.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Here's Darren Dreger, our TSN Hockey Insider. The Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance. It add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance. So we'll get to our best bets. Brought to you by ProLine. Continue to recap what was a disappointing night in Toronto last night and tee up what should be a big night tonight. You all right over there?
Yeah, you just kind of butchered that extra.
NFL draft tonight. We'll tee that up a bit, too. Overdrive continues on TSN2.
We just did a segment with Dregs that should have been on air. It was a heated discussion about sports, hockey.
Well,
money,
people are fired
agents.
Up. People are fired up. The city is fired up today. If you're an NFL fan, at least you can turn the page and watch the draft tonight. Like, you're going to be watching the hockey games. I'm going to check out the hockey games tonight.
You
Washington
just told me
Pitt.
A couple hours ago, no interest.
Well, I'm more interested in the NFL draft.
Yeah.
Like, the four quarterback. This could be a crazy night. Like, the Pats have a couple of picks in the first round. The Bills have a couple of picks.
Man, do they know how to make it a spectacle, don't they?
They set
they
it up
do
beautifully.
It right.
They set it up beautifully.
Yeah.
You have no idea who's taking what. Like, the Browns have the first and fourth pick.
Somebody had a complaint. I don't know if it was Rich Eisen or somebody. They wanted it to stop being tipped off.
They don't do that anymore. They actually took that advice.
Seems like there's enough greasy people around, whether it be...
Let me rephrase that. The NFL Network and ESPN, the two networks that actually broadcast it, they have agreed not to tip off the picks. The guy working for Yahoo, he doesn't care. He still tips them off on Twitter.
Yeah, but aren't they allowed to say, I think they're going with this guy, and they actually know?
Well, of course. They play dumb. They're like, I'll tell you what, this would be a great pick. Now, I don't know if they're going to take him, but you got to think this guy would really fit in. And a lot of times it is completely bogus because they do know. But they don't literally tip off who's actually going to be taken. Don't forget, Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Find everything podcasted from the show online at tsn1050.ca and check us out on iTunes. So the NFL draft going on tonight. Jays Red Sox tonight. Couple of games in the NHL. Couple of games in the NBA. Still a pretty good sports night, but it's not the same as
just
what we
deflating.
Had last night.
We were supposed to be queuing up Tampa-Toronto second round Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah. TFC, they almost had it, man. Penalties last night.
Yeah, they booted a couple over the net, too.
Michael Bradley missed the net by about 25 feet.
Yeah.
That was not good.
Bit outside.
Yeah. Just a bit outside. The old Bob Uecker. I would love to interview Bob Uecker. I think that might be one of my top five interview requests.
Bobby the Uke?
Bob Uecker. You got to go back and find his appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Some of the funniest
this is a story.
Stuff.
Is he still alive?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Well, he's been old forever, it seems.
Well, he's got the gray hair. He's had the gray hair going for like 40 years.
Does he still do the Brewers games?
As far as I know, I think he still does. I don't listen to Brewers radio, so I'm not really familiar.
Didn't he play in Major League? Like, wasn't he the guy in Major League?
Yeah, he was. He was the announcer in the movie Major League.
He's just getting gooned in every game.
He's still calling games with the Brewers? Yeah. And he used to do those Miller Lite commercials. And
he's the best.
He's awesome.
And he's still alive.
Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on Pittsburgh tonight, and I'm on Vegas tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 60. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Do you think Washington has a shot? You think they can finally beat Pittsburgh?
No, I just think that Pittsburgh has turned into a winning machine, and they know how to get the job done under any circumstances. No Malkin, no worries. Matt Murray's going to be under distress. He's got to get the job done.
I have no reason to say this, but I feel like Washington...
Finally, after all these years,
At some point, right? A broken clock is still... I'm going to George Bush myself here. A blind squirrel.
Still, if you put your head up a bull's ass, you can tell it's a T-bone.
That's you miss right. 99% of the shots you don't take.
We're going to be back tomorrow.
Now, hold up, man. I'm so fearful of George Bushing myself ever since your 99 shots. And okay, we got to get out of here.
Buddy, I thought we were pretty good until the last segment.
We had a pretty good afternoon.
I thought.
Like, it wasn't maybe the greatest show we've ever done, but it wasn't the worst. It was pretty good. Yeah. We took some calls. Shout out to people that were calling and texting and tweeting and emailing.
We always do our best. We'll give it another shot tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We're going to chat then.